And we are live. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the Banff Podcast. I am your host, Mike Lafferty, coming to you from the palatial Banff Broadcasting Studio. You can see our new particle cannon behind me. Things are really shaping up here at Banff. And directly beneath me on the Brady Bunch grid is Craig Campbell, the president, CEO, and head
CFO, CIO. CFO.
Gaming czar of Nerdburger Games. How you doing, sir?
I'm good. And as of about a half hour ago, I am sheltered in place and ready to go.
I am also sheltered in place. Day 16, I think, of sheltering in place. It's getting hard, man. It's getting hard. next to Craig is Walt, our frequent Star Wars co-host. How you doing, Walt?
Is that frequent Star Wars co-host or stalwart?
Stalwart.
You think with the right accent, gang.
You've got a big wart.
Oh, God. I don't need any more problems.
Hey, Paul Malchow is talking to us. Hey, how you doing, Paul? He's on the YouTube comments.
Nice.
So. Yeah,
delightful.
In lower right-hand corner, that is not young Richard Dreyfuss. That is middle-aged Jason Townsend. How you doing?
You know, I wish I do kind of love Richard Dreyfuss, so you could just keep on saying that if you want. I'm good, thanks. We're week three of work from home here at the Paizo Studios.
All right, cool. We'll talk about your next product, Mr. Holland's Opus, here in a few minutes.
That was a good movie.
I love that movie.
I almost got an Oscar for that.
Fair enough. Directly above Jason Toundrow is Jacob Blackman. How you doing?
Hello, I'm on day 10 myself.
All right, cool. I'm still shaving, at least partially. I see you're giving that up. Yeah. And directly above Walt is Alice, whose name I'm not going to get wrong again. How you doing, Alice?
And I've been sheltered in place since February 21st. So, yep, it's been a while.
Of 2020 or?
Yeah.
Okay, just checking.
You know, since it happened. So.
Okay.
All and right. Thanks so for having me.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much. So today, that was loud. Was that loud for you guys?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, sorry. I was trying to accentuate and provide drama, and it made me a little... Anyway, we're talking sci-fi world building because Craig, had just launched a Kickstarter called Capers Offworld. And you might be familiar with Capers if you're a fan of this podcast because it won a BAMFsie last year.
Yes. Right about this time, yeah.
The most prestigious award in superhero RPGs. Also, the only award in superhero RPGs, but let's not quibble. Jason, are you frozen? You look like the end credits of a 70s cop show. Oh, you're still there. Okay.
I am. I'm listening. I'm enraptured by your dulcet tones, man.
I should have gone on the radio. This is all right. So, Craig, Capers is a cool, fun, relatively new superhero RPG that's gained a big following. The original Capers was set in 1920s, kind of Prohibition era, sort of cops and robbers, but everyone has superpowers and superhero genre. And we've taken that through a few different iterations.
Yes.
And this one, Capers Offworld, we're not really doing the standard superhero sci-fi. It's not really Green Lantern Corps. Kind of give us the elevator pitch for what's going on there.
No, the idea here is that just to confuse things, Capers set in the 1920s, then there was a supplement, Capers Noir, set in the 40s, that progresses the world forward, and then there's Capers Covert, which is set in the 60s, which progresses the world forward, and each time it kind of changes the flavor of the cops and robbers kind of theme. And then for this one, I went back and said, we'll go back to the 1920s, and we'll do an alternate history. It's exactly Prohibition era, and it's the supers that you know from the Capers book. So everything that's in the Capers book is usable, except that Earthlings have discovered space travel and have started venturing out into space. And so it becomes like space cops and rocket robbers in Prohibition era. But you can have Earthbound adventures via the Capers thing. You can go into space via Capers Offworld, and then one of the little sub-chapters in Capers Offworld will contain information about time travel, and that'll connect all of the eras.
Hey, Craig?
Yes?
I'm getting a little piece of the action vibe. As soon as you said Prohibition discovers space travel, right there. That's all right.
No, yeah.
Okay.
So that's the basic of it. So it's in being 1920s, it's, you know, kind of the beginning of the pulp era of kind of pulp magazines and stories. So Capers Offworld takes the bent of, yes, it's still, cops and robbers in space, but it's pulp style. And it's like 20s, 30s, kind of retro future Flash Gordon slash Buck Rogers style stuff. So you're going to see, you know, like jumpsuits with big bulb, you know, big bulb space helmets and things that clearly look like ray guns as opposed to Star Trek phasers or anything like that. So, it's that kind of event.
Okay. So you could play a Green Lantern, but it'd be more like a space cop or maybe a lensman from the old Ducky Smith pulps kind of feel.
There's actually the great thing about going to Offworld was there's certain powers that I developed for the core game and then for the supplements that I tried to keep kind of appropriate to like Earthbound and not get too kind of crazy and out there because that's just not the kind of supers that there are. But in Offworld, I was able to stretch the limits a little bit, and there is an energy construct power in the book, which is effectively this game's version of Green Lantern.
Sweet. Okay, cool.
It's not nearly as powerful as the lanterns can right. do, but you can create stuff.
The scale is just more human.
Yeah, that's true across all the caper stuff. It's it's not a super duper power, you know. It's superpowers, not super duper powers.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, since we're ostensibly talking about sci-fi game design, sci-fi settings, can you give us a little bit of you know, it sounds like 1920s Prohibition era, but people have discovered space travel, so we're kind of in that space pulp setting. Yep. What sort of changes did you have to make into the caper's history, caper's setting to take the setting in that direction?
Well, had to generate a little galactic neighborhood of alien species that you can play, and the original game in the GM toolbox, it introduced the Orions, which were like an alternate Earth where aliens invaded Earth during World War One instead of it being the Great War between nations. So they're kind of incorporated into this as still being like the big bad guys of the setting. But you can also, you can see the species you can play. You can play Cybans. There's a human on the left there, and then that's a Cyban, an Eglon, a Luxel, a Musari, and a Sklarn. And, you know, in keeping with kind of pulp era kind of space, stories and space world building, you've got a hawk person and a lizard person, and then kind of like a variant on the gray, like the big eyed hairless kind of steward of the galaxy type.
Sort of your David Bowie.
Yeah. So like the archetypes for the alien species were kind of drawn from like the stuff that people did. Like any of these characters could be somebody in a suit. Like there's no monster, there's no alien that looks completely unhuman. Like you needed to be able to make this as a movie and put a person in a rubber suit.
So this could all be in a Star Wars cantina or in a Flash Gordon serial. Yep. Okay. So this guy over here with the peg leg and the arm, is he like a pirate? I'm just saying that because he has a peg leg, and I'm an obvious kind of guy.
He's a Cyban, and the Cybans are a species of people whose their planet suffered a terrible, terrible disease that ravaged their bodies, and so they developed mechanical augmentations to replace things to strengthen their bodies. And then also in the midst of all this, there was a lot of fighting with the Orions, and so they've actually been displaced from their planet and now are living on space stations. So they're the friendly version of the Borg, but in 1920s pulp style.
Okay, cool.
I love the soaring 20s.
And for people
welcome to the soaring 20s.
Yeah, and for people who don't know how to play capers but want to learn, BWK, Babies with Knives, the sister podcast of Banff, is actually featuring capers for our month. So you get to learn through crash courses and character creation and all that.
Right on.
So you can learn how to play.
So how do you preserve what you think of as the essential capers, tabletop experience while going into outer space? Did you have to, carefully play test and try to rein things in a little bit, or was it more freewheeling than that?
Well, I mean, at this point, I know the system well enough that powers usually come together pretty easily. So there was playtesting, certainly, but like the powers didn't do anything too out of the ordinary that I was worried about. The spaceship combat took a minute to work out and kind of develop different roles for characters on board the spaceship. So you've got a captain role and a navigator role and a gunner role and things that they can do on the spaceship. And then other characters can function as like support roles. So that if you have a space combat, everybody's got something to do.
Great.
Do you have actual ships in it?
It's kept like a lot of caper stuff is, it's kept a little bit on the generic side. The idea being that there's like, you know, light freighter and heavy warship and, you know, a cruiser. And so there's kind of generic terms for things, but then each of the species kind of has their look for their spaceships. The Cybans are in big spheres. The Luxel are, you know, the big tall aliens. They have this really kind of neat design that Beth Varney came up with that has a very it's a very chrome silver kind of look and has a sort of Art Deco styling to it.
Do we have any of this art we can show off?
I received some of this other artwork like. You know, like really, really recently. I don't have it handy right in front of me, but I could probably pull some of it together. But I mean, there's the stuff that's on the Kickstarter pages. That was the stuff I got done before the Kickstarter, right? So like we're wrapping up artwork now.
Do the ships have character sheets and stats?
Not specifically. They have a handful of stats, but they don't. You don't need a big sheet to do it. Like you need just some basic information about the ships, and then you've got basically mounted equipment that you can have. So you can have guns and boarding platforms and tubes, tractor beams, things like that, that you can attach to it. And you can also, there's a piece of equipment that you can mount on your, called a, what's it called? A power amplifier, where if you have like a beam type power, if your superpower is fire beam, you can make the ship fire a fire beam by channeling your fire beam through this amplifier.
That's good.
And it takes it up to like spaceship scale. And
it allows the player to keep using the abilities that he plays the game to use. Like, I'm the fire guy. That's why I'm playing this game, because I want to be the fire guy. And I'm in a spaceship. What do I do? And the answer is use your fire powers on the enemy spaceship. That's great. That's good. Smart move.
Reminds me a lot of the Blackbird view screen that lets Cyclops amplify his vision through it.
Yeah, that reminds me, in War of the Realms Marvel, which I think maybe one other person on this podcast besides me has read, the Inhumans are going to war with various other factions in the galaxy, and they find a way to weaponize Black Bolt's voice.
Oh.
As a ship-to-ship weapon. So, Dan, that's a genius.
Don't travel through space, but that doesn't...
It's... Do I have to tell a guy with the handle Dr. Comics that it's comic book science?
I just wondered if they came up with an answer for that, or
if it was a paragraph like this long explaining it, technobabble. That, you know, they infused the audio signals with space traveling plasma and inverted the tachyon flow, and
yes, reverse the tachyon polarity. That takes care of everything.
Yep. All right, hand wavy.
Get a dumb answer. All right.
Sorry. Well, hey, Craig, you are doing like gangbusters, like you used to do with capers. You funded in the first, incredibly short time interval.
Well, and I did this like much like the other games, the other books for pretty much everything that I've done for Kickstarter is I figure out everything's done and written, but then I take everything and I say, okay, I'm going to pull this out. I'm going to pull this out. I'm going to pull this out. What's the slimmest version of this book I feel is reasonable as a product? And that's what my funding goal becomes. And then stretch goals adds more into the book. So as we hit stretch goals, it's like, now you're getting more monsters. Now you're getting more powers. Now you're getting some alternate rules.
Yeah. That's cool. So how long is the super slimmed down version?
I want to say the slimmed version is somewhere in the 60-ish page, and the final version will be in the 90-ish page range.
Well, congratulations, man. It looks great.
Quick question.
I'm looking forward to it.
Is there like a human government as a unified world body, or there was, you know, or... Are there different still competing nationalities, or how'd you solve that problem?
I I touch on it, and I it's basically described very narratively, but there's not a lot of depth to it, because the idea is to get these people in space and either, you know, perpetrating crimes or solving crimes. But it is discussed about which nations post-World War I have kind of taken the forefront in space exploration. So there's nations that have done it. There are two organized crime gangs, Capone's gang in Chicago and the New York gang, that are actually like they're because they're so incredibly wealthy, they can build spaceships basically. And then there's also a couple of corporate conglomerates that are, that come together both American and outside of the US that are there as well. So there's like, you know, cooperation between different companies or countries to pursue spaceflight. And everything, you know, reaping the rewards of what they can find in outer space, whatever that may be, diplomatically or resources or whatever it is you're going to go after. And so, you know, every world, the worlds that are presented with alien species on them are not presented like there's no colonization going on. That's not, you know, it's too early for any of that rabble to really get rolling. And that's not what the game is about. Right. But then there's also planets that are in there that are not inhabited by intelligent species and that are, you know, just have, you know, animals and plants and monsters and things to discover on them.
So what kind of crimes are we doing in Capers?
What kind of crimes? Well, all the crimes that you can do in the regular Capers, because, you know, there's you know, the importation of alcohol is illegal in the United States. So what about importing alcoholic drinks from some alien place and selling it at a really high premium at really exotic, you know, expensive speakeasies where, like, you know, you want to try what the Sklarn you know, tip back to celebrate? Here, you know, this is going to cost you some money. So there's that. I mean, and it's crossed over a little bit too with just other, you know, like what you might be scavenging things from a planet. You might be bringing in something that is exotic and interesting, but is otherwise regulated in some way. Because, you know, there is a fear of like bringing too much alien technology or things from other worlds to the United States or to the US or to any of the other countries for that matter. You know, there's, And then there's opportunists, of course. You can have smugglers and assassins and grifters, and there's all sorts of things that you can do with it.
Is there a space bank for me to rob?
I'm sorry, what's that?
A space bank that I can rob?
there are certainly space banks that you can rob. There's always banks, right? And there's like, and then I had to translate too to put it all in space credits, right? So there's a credit. There's a new table of gear and everything to cover the credits, because there is these earthlings and their immediate neighbors that have they've kind of made friends with have formed Star Corps, and that's the, you know, the space cops.
So if I'm Elliot Ness, I'm a member of Star Corps trying to track down bootleggers running, you know, juice from this Glarn planet or something like that.
That's what they should call it if it's from space. They just call it the juice.
There's an adventure that's going to be, I haven't put up there, that'll be a PDF that'll be an adventure, the adventure that I used when I was playtesting, where it actually revolves around a space alcohol that is colloquially named the good stuff. Give me a bottle of the good stuff. And it's hallucinogenic and really exotic and strange. And it comes from an alien world.
Tell me you're going to have somebody develop the good stuff for real, right?
Like, oh yeah, I got with all that fat cash that I'm making on this Kickstarter, I've got a team on it right now.
They're on
the Nerdburger yacht as we speak.
Nerdburger. That's your first stretch goal, right?
I got the yacht back with Capers.
The alcohol, then. The alcohol is the first stretch goal.
There you go.
Yeah,
I'm thinking a nice brand of bespoke absinthe would really fit the niche for the good stuff. A nice shade of green.
It's got to be an odd color, or just mix it with the right thing so you get, like, you know, some weird yellow or something. Yeah.
So something I was going to ask is if you were going to have adventures that tie into your off-world capers, so you could help not only expand the line, but also the universe that you're developing off-world.
I mean, there's the one adventure that, you know, each of the supplements has had an adventure with it. I may develop more as we go down the road here too, because I'm always looking for ways to support the game line. And then there's the possibility of community created content that I'm kind of toying around with. And I know I've got a few different people who are big fans of capers, and who have ideas for adventures in the various setting, you know, the various time periods. And then, of course, there's in the back of my head, there's a like an adventure path style thing that would take you across all the time settings and into space at some point as well. But I don't know. We'll see.
All right.
Adventures supplements are a tough enough sell for a little bitty company. Adventures can be even tougher.
Yeah, especially in these trying times when the world's on fire.
Yeah, you need a crisis of infinite bootleggers.
There you go.
I like the idea of playing leverage or hustle style characters in capers.
Yeah.
Those types of adventures.
Yeah, that's one genre I feel like the Ocean's 11 kind of heists, it seems like there hasn't been a whole lot of crossover, you know, with science fiction on that. I feel like Killjoys kind of scratches that sometimes, and there's a few episodes like The Train Job from Firefly. I felt like they were kind of doing some of that.
Yeah, and so. I think those are some of the more fun ones to do.
But didn't the original Buck Rogers, not the original, the 1970s Buck Rogers have a thing where he ripped off a casino?
Oh, that sounds really familiar. Like some space casino, and they had, it looked like a casino, but everything was silver and weird colors. And, you know, like they had something that looked like a roulette table, but it was like just a little different from a roulette table. Like one of those things where everything's familiar, but not the same.
It was a laser roulette table.
There you go. Something like that. Yeah.
Oh, I
wouldn't be surprised.
Hey, Jason, did you have a page for your the new adventure path we can but can't quite talk about?
So we can talk about it.
Ooh, adventure path.
Heizo's given it a product.
Is it Fly Free or Die?
Yeah. The product page is called We're No Heroes, which is the first volume of the new adventure path.
Weirdo okay. Heroes? Did I Weirdo just say that heroes. Right?
We're no heroes.
Oh, we're no heroes. Okay. We're no heroes.
Which is, and it has a heist in it, by the way.
Nice.
I like heists.
To dovetail right into what you were just talking about.
You son of a bitch, I'm in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is my first adventure path at Heizo since making the transition into the Star Chamber. And that cover art is not final, by the way.
That's load up anyway. It's just that beautiful art.
I just tried to. It didn't actually blow up that much, but I'll try to see what I can. Oh, enhance, zoom. All right, hang on one second.
You will not be disappointed when the art comes in. We have such a fantastic art department, a huge stable of amazing artists. I get to write up the art orders for this crazy shit, and then they hire somebody else to illustrate it, and I'm like, oh my God, right? But that has only started to come in. So I don't have any of that to show you yet. I'm not at liberty to reveal any of that yet. But We Are No Heroes is the first volume of the Fly Free or Die Adventure Path, which is a story about working class heroes that are just trying to pay the bills and, you know, do the job and get paid. They are pursued by faceless mega corporations, evil crime lords, and rival crews trying to steal their gig, right? This is not an adventure path for people that are out to save the galaxy. This is for the people that are trying to just find a way to make it through the day in a galaxy where everything is for sale, including your integrity. And when I was asked to explain how this is different than other adventure paths are kind of a rags to riches story, but this is rags to riches to ruin to revenge. So it's been a lot of fun to work on. It's kind of been my secret project for the last 6 months. BJ Hensley, who has done a lot of work for other companies, has come to write our first, this first one for us. This is her first major Paizo.
That has me interested. I love BJ's adventures.
Yeah, BJ does a lot of great stuff. And this adventure path will, to get back to a kind of our topic, this idea of world building, this adventure path is very sort of episodic. So the player characters kind of travel all throughout the Starfinder setting, doing lots of different jobs on different planets. And of course, every job goes bad, but always in a different way, right? They all go south, but in a different way. It's basically about the player characters struggle to kind of break free of all of their, all these people trying to tell them what to do, right? So there's a, if you liked Firefly, or if you liked Classic Traveler, where you're traveling from one star to the next, trying to buy low, sell high. If you like EVE Online, for that sense of the economy. If you thought that Edge of Empire was the best Star Wars role-playing game in that Fantasy Flight game series, any of that stuff, this is for you. This is the kind of AP for you.
When can I exchange American currency for this game?
November. I think the pre-order probably starts in October, but the first volume will not be out until November.
Or you can make your life easier just by subscribing to all their adventure paths, and then they'll just send it to you when it comes out.
No, we will totally send it to you in the mail. Thank you for that delightful plug, Alice. Yes, that's exactly
right. You're welcome. Unfortunately, I've lost a lot of money to that subscription service over the years.
I have been reading a lot lately about the early years of Paizo. I discovered that Lisa Stevens, one of the owners of Paizo, did this sort of monthly blog where she chronicled the entire history of the company from its founding back in about 2002, I think, up for about the 10 years to up to 2012. And it's fascinating reading how we developed that subscription model that you're talking about, which has really become kind of the foundation of the company. And it's interesting how that subscription model influences what we can make and what we can publish and what we can't. These are all things I never had any clue about until I was actually in the room making these decisions about trying to plan our product schedule for the next year or 2 years, and how much the subscription model influences that. It's really interesting.
So I would like to be invited into that meeting sometime. I can wear a disguise.
Okay, well, you gotta look like Richard Dreyfuss.
Oh, no. Make him wear a hamburger because he's the nerd burger. Come on, make him wear a hamburger costume.
You know, actually, if you showed up delivering food, probably people would notice and let you in. But the burger idea is a good one. I would go with that. I was really excited. I will not lie. Like when I applied for the developer job, because I was an editor at Paizo for about a year and a half. And I loved being an editor, and we have an amazing, fantastic editorial team with a bunch of unsung heroes who just do not get enough credit for the fantastic work they do. But editing was not a very creative job for me. And you know me, I've been a GM since I was 12, right? So I really want to get in there and start creating. And so when I got a chance to join the Star Chamber, I literally played The Room Where It Happens from Hamilton, like almost nonstop for about 24 hours, right? Because that was exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to be in the room when these decisions get made about the future of the game. And Starfinder is such a new game still that there's still a lot of really important decisions to be made about it. It's not like Pathfinder, where every corner of Galarian has been nailed down, you know, and described in a book somewhere.
Well, speaking of, making your mark, and we're talking about world building. Yeah. What you described to me isn't quite the 1978 Christos Harverson classic Convoy set in space, but maybe it's akin to that.
There is a lot of space trucker.
Okay. So how do we go from the epic space fantasy of Starfinder, which is kind of, let's say, fancy, to space truckers?
So I and Keeley, Jason Keeley, my fellow Adventure Path creator, we like to use the word gonzo to describe Starfinder. It's got fantasy, it's got high technology, it's got everything in it, and kind of the crazier we can make it, the better. Craig, this is a very interesting, because you were talking about your concept of aliens in Capers, and you wanted to go for that person in a rubber suit look, right? Because it was part of your genre. We also have a real strong cantina feel to Starfinder, but we went the other direction. We want to have all kinds of crazy aliens, but we wanted to have no budget in terms of like our special effects, right? So you can play a floating alien jellyfish. You can play like all kinds of crazy weirdo monsters, that aliens that have, that are not humanoid or look anything even remotely like what you would see in a weekly television show, because nobody could afford the money, right? Could afford it. So with Fly Free or Die was a chance to, in many ways, go into an unexplored, undeveloped part of the setting, because although we have literally described dozens of mega corporations in Starfinder, we've never focused on what it's like to actually work for one of them, right? And so coming up with my version of the Weyland-Yutani Corporation, of the faceless company that you actually just call the company, and everybody knows what you're talking about, that treats you like a number and just wants to make money off of your labor.
Wait. I think we're hitting a little too close to reality now.
Well, if you think that's an accident, you would be wrong. I'm a firm believer that games can help us understand the world we live in and each other and the human experience. And I know that sounds really highfalutin, but you know, I'm a former academic, so this is what you get, right?
That's why I love games. I believe this yeah. very strongly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, people that say keep your politics out of gaming, gaming has never not had politics in it.
Right? Just be subtle about it. Yeah.
As Jacob and Walt will know what I mean, comics have never not had politics in them, right? Tell that to Captain America punching Hitler in the face 6 months before we declared war. Right? Well, anyway.
Or people saying that there needs to be more white people in the Black Panther comics, so the next issue has them beating up the KKK.
There you go. My dad was a sheet metal mechanic for my entire life. He had a good union job. You know, my mom was a secretary. This is for all of us who have to work every month to make our rent, right? Like that's what this is for. And so, yeah. So I wanted to explore that. And because, Mike, like you said, Starfinder has often been about pretty cosmic stuff, you know, like our next adventure path coming up, is our high level at AP, where the galaxy is invaded by this giant, devastating Death Star alien weapon, and you have to find a way to stop it. Like, it's pretty high stakes stuff, you know? And so for this, because everybody had taken up all that stuff, I got to write about a piece of the setting that really no one had really dealt with before. So for example, the first volume is going to have rules for all that merchant stuff. Like how do you find a cargo? How much do you have to pay for it? How do you sell it? How do you find a seller? All of those merchant rules, like buying and selling stuff. People have been asking for that for Starfinder for 2 years. Like, what are the economics of owning a starship? Starfinder has never answered that question until now, right? So that was fun to do.
Cool. Sounds like a good time. And assuming that our civilization still exists in November, I will give it a look.
God, I hope so. I'm trying to think what else is in there. There's a player's guide in the first volume too. So like, you know, how to make characters for this AP with a bunch of like specific backgrounds to tie you into the story. So like, I think there's 6 or 8 of them, and you just pick one, and then your character is going to have an automatic connection to one of the important recurring NPCs. There's a bunch of gear that first level characters can use. It's done as a company catalog. So the company that you work for, and like, here's a bunch of stuff that you can buy. Everything from spacesuits and stuff like or mining equipment to uppers to keep you driving those long hauls through hyperspace, and opioids to help put the pain away when you need to go to bed. And then let's see what else. Oh, and some new character options and stuff too, like new themes and archetypes and stuff like that. So
I totally picture playing someone out of Killjoys right now.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like it's very much that kind of thing. Or Scum and Villainy, which is another great RPG that I'm really into right now.
Can I call it Space Road Truckers?
Yeah. I wanted to use the phrase Space Truckers in like the back cover copy, but my editors wouldn't let me. But even though Space Truck, they use that language in the Alien RPG, which has just come out. They have a whole chapter on Space Truckers.
Oh, I forgot about that. We should talk to those guys. That sounds fun. Hey, we would be remiss if we talked about Starfinder and we had Jacob on the podcast and we didn't mention that Jacob and our friend of the podcast, Owen Stevens, are right now on Games on Tabletop, the other crowdfunding platform. They're trying to fund the, man, this title kills me.
Starfare Adversaries Legacy Bestiary.
Well, that is some cool ass shit.
And I mean, it's got a cola mimic. How can you not back it?
It's got a cola mimic.
It's out cola bottle mimics. Come on. Well, how many mimics can you have? Lots.
Jacob. Well, Owen's recently suggested a whole bunch of new mimics I need to draw, like, you know, toilet mimics and VR goggle mimics that are eating people's faces. So, yeah, I've got a lot of mimic art to do in the near future.
I want to tell you something about this book, but before I do, tell the audience who may have never heard of it what it is.
Okay, the Legacy Bestiary is my effort to convert as many classic fantasy creatures from Pathfinder into Starfinder. These are a lot of monsters that have not yet been touched on by any of the three alien archives that Paizo has released. And I also made sure there's a fourth coming out, but it hasn't been released yet, so I'm not counting it. And it wasn't out when I wrote it.
Yeah.
And also I tried not to include any of the monsters that are in the Legendary Games Alien Bestiary. Mm. So that way I could put in as many creatures as I could that had not already been converted to Starfinder.
Yeah.
And I've got over 200 creatures in there. Owen's done a little bit of writing on it, but that was mostly based on a few suggestions that he had of things he wanted to include. I wanted to make sure to have fun things like mimics in there and update them. And he said, ooh, put a starship mimic in there. And I drew it, but I'm not familiar enough with the starship rules. So he wrote up the starship mimic, little things like that. I'm really looking forward to people's reaction to how some of these creatures are going to have changed from their fantasy counterparts to their science fiction counterparts.
So I have to tell you about a meeting that we had in the Starfinder team when we were brainstorming future books. And one of the members of the team proposed exactly the book that you have just done, right? And we decided not to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is if any of you out there ever want to see this book, like, you have to buy Jacob's because you're not going to get it from us. We're never going to do it. Paizo's never going to do it. But
and use it with the upcoming adventure path.
Yeah. I mean, but go back to, you were talking about how you picked monsters that weren't in this other book.
Mm-hmm.
Did that involve some hard cuts? Did you lose some monsters that you really wanted to do?
Yeah, because they had already taken care of some major things. Like, they had already done things like chitons and aboleths, you know, several really classic creatures. Certainly alien, but not some of the more famous fantasy monsters. They hadn't really touched on a lot of the demons, devils, and extraplanar creatures. So I had a lot of fun. Nice. Converting those.
Yeah.
And a lot of more traditional mythological monsters like manticores and chimera, those hadn't been done either.
That's great.
So I got to do a lot of the really favorites of fantasy creatures.
That's cool.
Do we get Kender?
Those are WotC. Those belong specifically to Dragonlance. So no, I do not have Kender. I'm sure I could create a race, and you know, maybe call them the Keldar or something.
Kleptonomes.
Kleptonomes. Yeah.
One more request, because I know, and I'll try to ask too many more. But do we have owlbears?
There are not only owlbears.
Oh, wait till you hear this.
But because there were uplifted bears in one of the alien archives, I created uplifted owlbears.
Now I can play an owlbear PC.
Absolutely. I put in the graph template and the race write up in there so you can use them as PCs. I gave them this wonderful background too, because they're basically created to be genetically engineered soldiers, but they still have that rage and anger that all owlbears do, where they just want to tear things apart. But now they have focused themselves on going out into the galaxy and stopping unscrupulous scientists who are performing illegal experiments on animals and creatures. So owlbears are leading this crusade of genetically augmented and uplifted creatures against evil scientists.
The owlbear crusade. I love it.
So the first piece of art I did was this one here, who's the owlbear crusader with his plasma sword.
That's great.
Did you? Yeah. I don't know if you noticed, I didn't play the obnoxious 80s soundtrack, but I had a little video slideshow I'd made of some Jacob's art from this project, and it included the owlbear. So
we love the video. We were grateful for the no sound.
Yeah, sorry. All right. Well, hey, I have to get back to the digital salt mines where I get my mortgage money from. So any closing thoughts before we wrap things up, folks?
We were supposed to talk to Walt about his sci-fi book real quick.
Next time. I was having more fun talking to everybody who has beards. But did you notice that Alice and I don't have beards and we're in the middle and everybody else is on the bookends?
That doesn't matter.
What's that? Well, that we don't have beards?
That was an Eric the Viking joke.
Oh.
Now you have people with beards on one side and people with mustaches on the other. That doesn't matter.
Thanks for having me on, gang.
Well, thank you, Dico, and back Craig's Kickstarter. And if you need to learn how to play capers, check out Babies with Knives, because we are all month long, we're teaching you how to play.
Yep.
And if you like OSR, you like sci-fi, check out the White Star System and Hazard Studios products for Hunter's Moon. If you like the show Killjoys, these are some great adventures to pick up. Mm-hmm. So, we managed to get in there. So. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.
Raw.
Bye, everyone.